Hey, what's up, guys? It's the Stretch Goose Podcast. It's episode 83, closing in on number 90. How's everybody really doing? Now, I know I say, what's up, guys? I know I jump out there with the, you know, woo, you know, for as upbeat as I can get, but how are you guys really doing? I know that the Christmas spirit's got to be flowing. I know that you guys are probably running around looking for your presents, all that shopping. And while you're doing that, behind the scenes in government, there is a stopgap spending bill. It is kind of amazing. It is 1,538 pages, I believe. It's a stack of ungodly shit. And let's get into this bill for a second. Here's Nancy Mace.
Okay, so we printed off the CR that dropped last night and the last CR that Congress did. And wouldn't you know, the CR that was done in September went from September 26th to December 20th, 85 days for this CR. It's 21 pages. Now we have the next CR that we're going to be voting on in the next day or two. It is 1,547 pages. And wouldn't you know, it lasts for a shorter period of time, 84 days instead of 85 days. I'm not a mathematician, but this does not add up. So we're going through the bill. The first 14 pages currently are just a table of contents. Page 15 is where the CR portion of the bill is. It's 9 pages long. And then everything after the 9 pages for the CR is just noise and has nothing to do with keeping the government open. So for example, there are 500 plus pages related to healthcare policy, which doesn't have anything to do with keeping the government open. There's $100 billion of disaster relief in here, which is desperately needed, by the way, but should be its own standalone bill. But this is what Congress does to hold members hostage who need disaster relief for their districts, their states, after the hurricanes. It's wrong to hold people hostage over something that's desperately needed, and we have funding for it, for all this other junk that's in here. And so we're going through the bill. We will detail it for you. So follow us and online and pay attention. We'll be posting information throughout the day about this massive bill wasting your tax dollars.
So how the hell did we go from basically 30 pages to 1,547 pages? Roughly the same amount of time, 85 days, 84 days. So how did we get to that? Well, the only way you get to that massive number of pages is if you are tossing in a pile of nonsense that's got nothing to do with it, government function. It is simply the end of the year. Get it in before Donald Trump takes presidency. Get it in before you get, you know, administrative changes, things of that nature. And so Elon Musk, who is going to be a part of that government oversight type thing, he tweets out that this bill should not pass. It does not help America. And he's right, because you can't sit there and go and jump, you know, 1,500 pages for the same amount of time at the end of the year unless you were throwing some bullshit in it. Now, everybody has been bagging on Mike Johnson, the speaker, for even allowing it to come to the floor for readings and things. I can't fault the guy for that. He's trying to at least get government funded, and he's making a sacrifice. And then, you know, he's playing politics. And when Trump comes in office, obviously, at the time he enters office, they'll be able to do a more, you know, accurate bill. Why, that boy, that accurate, that word escaped me. You know, and I don't have a problem with that, but everybody's shitting on him, terrible speaker, blah, blah, blah. But we've already got the Senate in an uproar over it. Rand Paul's already acknowledged the bill is terrible, and he's going to, you know, do what he can to put that thing in the paper shredder. So I don't know how far this bill was ever going to get to begin with, but it's the fact that it was even, you know, printed and produced for reading kind of set everybody off. And we haven't even voted on this thing yet, but for some reason we have pain and suffering from Democrats.
Hey everybody, Congressman Maxwell Frost here, and wow, I am here to talk about the chaos that's going on right now here in Washington, D.C. For people who don't know, tomorrow, Friday evening, the government is set to shut down unless Congress passes a bill to fund the government for the next few months. And there was a bill that came out this morning, bipartisan, had support from Democrats and Republicans, and we were supposed to pass it actually right now. We're supposed to be voting on it. A few hours before, Elon Musk, the billionaire, not an elected person, just a rich guy who spent hundreds of millions of dollars to get Donald Trump elected and he bought influence. Elon Musk comes out and says, you know what? I don't like it. I don't like the bill. Get rid of it. I don't want it. And little by little, a bunch of Republicans, because they're scared of this billionaire, came out and said, I agree with him. I hate it. And then Donald Trump comes out and says, I hate it. Let's do another bill. Let's do something else. Granted, we are about 24 hours out from the government shutting down. The day before, these people, this billionaire who has bought influence with money, comes out and says, I don't like it because it doesn't cut enough benefits from working families. And so now we're at this standstill. It's all this chaos now. You know, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is probably behind locked doors trying to figure out what the hell to do because he doesn't have his own people in check. And so we'll keep you all updated on what's going on. But the fact of the matter is that if the government shuts down, it impacts working people. The TSA agents will not get their paychecks while the government shut down. Soldiers, people in the military won't get their paychecks while the government shuts down. A lot of services stop. And not just that, but this bill had money for hurricane relief and had stuff for disaster relief that we need in Florida right now. We just got hit by so many hurricanes. Asheville, North Carolina. And so they're really messing with resources for working people because a damn billionaire spent hundreds of millions of dollars because he wants to run this country and run this government. So I'll keep you all updated, but we're not going to move an inch. We're not going to vote for something that's going to take away essential services, that's going to take away $6 a day in SNAP benefits from a mother in Orlando, Florida. We're not going to vote to take away benefits, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. These things are a fact of life. And something that all Americans deserve and that they've earned.
Let's talk about that hurricane issue. Now I'm going completely, you know, off the cuff here. I don't have any of that research in front of me. But when those hurricanes hit, if I remember correctly, the money was there and the Democratic Party refused to release it. And at this point right now, they sort of have control of the Senate. If I remember correctly, that is what went down. I also remember that there was funding that these bills, that a standalone bill for funding FEMA was never put before the floor of the House or the Senate. Why didn't the Democrats do that? Why didn't they try to push to release the funds that were sitting there? Because I remember Mike Johnson saying there was $6 or $7 billion for disaster relief just sitting there that the Democratic Party in the Senate refuses to look at, and Joe Biden refuses to release. So what happened at that point? Why is the money not used for that? Why didn't it happen? They kept saying FEMA was out of money because they continued to use it for migrant families, you know, holding them up in hotels and whatever. Why wasn't that addressed at that time? Now here we are at the end of the year. We continually have to fund the government every 90 days. I don't understand that. I don't know why we just don't have a yearly budget for the government. But set that aside. What I'm confused about is all the stuff that they're stuffing into these bills right at the end of the year for disaster relief when they had the opportunity to put standalone bills on the floor of the Senate or on the floor of the House. No Democrat authored a bill for that. And if there was truly $6 or $7 billion in a disaster fund unused, why wasn't it used? We had people in North Carolina stuck in the mountains. They didn't have any access to, or communications or transportation or food. We had back-to-back hurricanes smashing through Florida, and none of that money was ever used. Or if it was used, why wasn't it addressed for increasing funding? Like, these are the things that I'm not understanding, and I don't understand why these Democrats, like this particular individual here, are getting on social media and saying that it's the fault of the Republican Party or the fault of a guy who puts up a tweet saying, I don't like this bill because it doesn't cut in favor of American families. I'm not understanding any of this. It just seems like the Democratic Party is very much in favor of not helping the Republican Party until it benefits them. And I guess you could say the same on both sides, but it just irritates me. It's like, what happened to the disaster relief at the time it was happening? Where was that money? Why didn't that get done? And now you're over here complaining about it. And that's just kind of where I'm at with that. It's just really weird to me. And then this other stuff about blaming, Elon Musk, and a lot of them are calling him President Musk because he made a tweet. Donald Trump doing his political rounds, he finally got to looking at it and he said, yeah, this is BS too. Because again, how do you go from 30 pages to 1,500 pages? It shouldn't be that way. And there shouldn't be a bunch of rewriting of healthcare policy or funding in, certain healthcare issues when those should be standalone bills. This disaster thing should be a standalone bill. But there is something else that's in this bill that I want to address. And this is from Fox News. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but this is Jesse Waters talking about what is in the bill, some bullet points.
Christmas is only a week away, and while you're out doing last-minute shopping, so is Congress. But here's the difference. You have a budget, Congress doesn't. And Congress just got caught trying to put $100 billion on our credit card. How long does $100 billion last? Probably all year, right? No, 2.5 months. And then they do it all again. Look at this. Look how many pages this is. It's 1,500 pages. They released it last night. We're supposed to read it and vote on it today. But no one read it, except us. They tried to write into law that no one's allowed to look at Congress's emails. So if I get a subpoena, you get a subpoena, we have to hand our emails over. But Congress, if they get a subpoena, they don't have to. So if Trump wants to investigate the January 6th committee to find out what happened, you can't see the politicians' emails. If Nancy's texting Paulie P about investment opportunities, no one's allowed to see it. Congress just tried to write a law that puts them above the law. I thought no one was above the law. Didn't they say that all last year? Congress is also funding a censorship program. They're giving money to the State Department to censor things that they don't like online. We're funding Congress to take away our free speech. And remember, vax mandates, they're back. Congress is funding more vax mandates, for the next pandemic. The section of the bill is called Pandemic Preparedness. Gain of function, the risky experiments that flew out of Wuhan and killed a million of us. Congress is trying to fund gain of function research again. I'm sure not here in America. I'm sure we funded it to some other country like Ukraine or China, somewhere in Africa. Oh, no, 12 new biolabs that won't leak, they swear. $3 million to test the inspection of molasses. Not to test the molasses, to inspect the inspectors. Have we been having trouble with bad molasses? Was there a molasses recall that I missed? Instead of inspecting the inspectors, why don't the first line of inspectors just do their job? $15 million to make recycling more accessible. It's not accessible now. Everywhere you look, there's a blue bin. When you throw something out, there's like five different little bins, and you're analyzing what goes in which one. Does this go in this bin? This recycling all goes to the same place anyway. Half the plastic's in landfills. And $100 million goes to migrant farm workers. Why don't the farms pay the migrants? Not sure. Gavin's vineyard needs us to pay his migrants to pick his grapes. He's not making enough money from wine. He needs a subsidy. Why are we paying for Gavin Newsom to get paid? He can't get paid without our help. Must not be very good wine. But I'm willing to test it if he sends me some. And this is a five-year, $100 billion contract. Once this thing passes, Doge can't touch it. Oh, and they're keeping Kamala's electric bus program. Kamala lost, but her earmark didn't. No one cares about electric buses, remember?
Haven't you always wanted an electric bus charging station?
Hell no. Why would I want that? What's that going to do?
I barely catch the bus.
Oh, no, that sucks.
How excited are you to go green?
What's to be excited for?
Are you excited for the electric bus charging station?
I don't really care.
Are you real excited for the electric bus charging station? No.
The bill also bans sexy memes. Yeah, here's a sexy Jesse deepfake. I look good, but I don't look that good. I guess people have been putting AOC's face on bikini models in the group chat. Well, Congress says you can't make us look too hot or you're going to prison. Memes are a crime. Oh, and the bill's also woke. It changes the term offender to justice-involved individual and homeless to an individual experiencing homelessness. Who wrote this bill? The Republicans have the majority. I swear to God, the squad wrote this thing. Doesn't stop there. Remember Obamacare? You hate it, right? So does Congress. But now Congress gets to opt out of Obamacare. You're not allowed to opt out. Congress, the people who wrote Obamacare into law, they don't like it. So they're opting out of it because they think they're better than you and they deserve more. And they actually do think they deserve more. Congress is trying to give themselves a raise.
Members are giving themselves a pay raise. Do you guys deserve a pay raise?
Well, that's news to me. It's good news.
People look at the performance of Congress and say, why should we give them more money?
What about the media? Think about that for a second.
We're not paid by public money.
I know you're not, but I mean, half of your listeners are not there anymore. You're still getting the same paycheck? What's going on?
Congress is giving themselves a $6,000 raise to keep up with the cost of living. Now, why has the cost of living gone up? Because of Congress. Congress is trying to give themselves a raise to keep up with the cost of living that they caused because they spent so much. Elon Musk says the bill is criminal. And anyone who votes for it should be voted out of office. And he has the money to make that happen. Elon blew this bill up all day. He and Vivek were all over it. And it lit a fire under the politicians.
This is a sandwich. I don't know how else to say that. We're being forced into this position.
Swamp's going to swamp, right?
Yeah, that's about 6 minutes. It's roughly a 12-minute clip. I wanted you guys to hear what is in the bill for the most part. This thing is just unbelievably full of garbage. It doesn't make any sense. Like he was saying, $15 million to make accessible recycling, $3 million for molasses inspecting, vaccine mandate, gain-of-function research is getting a funding improvements. There's a raise for the congressman. That part really does blow my mind a little bit. And there's this clip that I found that I have got to play. And it's members of Congress talking about why they need the money. And it's pretty funny.
Look, the average income in my district is $55,000 a year. A congressman makes $174,000 a year.
If I go back to my district where the average salary in some places is $32,000 and I say I don't make enough when I make $174,000, they would go ballistic. I'd be out of office in a heartbeat. And yet, trying to maintain two places to live, have clothes in two places, have a car in two places, it's very difficult.
When I got to Congress, I realized, holy smokes, that comes out of my pocket without reimbursement.
And you're not allowed to write off any of the expenses.
I've had a roommate every time I've rented an apartment. Upwards of 100 Congress members actually sleep in their office because it's expensive.
Washington's expensive.
All of us ought to be concerned about the future in terms of who can afford to do this.
Do you want it to still be the House of the people, or do you want it to be only wealthy people? I think that it's important to have cost of living adjustments.
I think there needs to be at least an inflationary adjustment.
I think it should at least keep up with inflation.
It should probably go up with the cost of living.
Congress works better when you have a broad swath of the American people being able to run and get elected. I really believe that.
Okay, so these guys are over here in Congress right now. They're saying we need this raise because we have to maintain two houses, plane flights, blah, 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 right? But one of the things that these guys don't tell you is how much they actually have in their pockets, how much money they actually have in their bank account, how much they're worth, how much they have net income. They don't tell you that. They want you to believe that they're dying on the vine at $174,000. So let's just take one of the speakers, for example. And I'm gonna do this because I'm thoroughly curious. I'm very curious about something. How much is this guy worth? Now I know it's the internet, but why not? Let's see. Larry B U C S-H-O-N 2024 Congress. Okay, so let's have some fun. Let's have some fun. This dude, Larry Bouchon, he is worth, he is worth $2 million. He is worth $2 million. He has rental properties all over the place as of 2018, raking in an average of $375,000. And he also gets his $174,000 salary. This is actually hilarious. So that's him. But he's also been in there a little bit. So one of the things that happens when you enter Congress is you come in with zero, you walk out with millions. And here is a list. Here is a list. Nancy Pelosi is worth $252 million. Mitt Romney, $234 million. Rick Scott is worth $546 million. Mark Warner, $246 million. Pete Ricketts, $161 million. Dan Goldman, $184 million. Daryl Issa, $234 million. Vern Buchanan, $249 million. The great Bernie Sanders coming in at $8 million. Kamala Harris, $8 million. Now, Joe Biden is right around $10 million. Now, let's talk about some of the new faces that have been in Congress for roughly 6 years at this point. I believe a lot of them are going to be doing year 7 and 8 soon. Rashida Tlaib has already surpassed $1 million. Ilhan Omar somehow is at $18 million, which she makes by doing more speaking engagements and lobbying and all that. Lauren Boebert is $2 million. So let's not cry for the congressman or the senator. These guys are sitting here bitching because they have to pay for two houses. When you look at a guy like, say, Bernie Sanders at $8 million, he's got three houses that he has. You got Larry Bushin over here, the Republican from Indiana, with raking in over $300,000 in rental property income, and he is worth damn near $2 million right now. So I don't understand why these guys. I do understand because they want to make it seem like they're broke as shit. A lot of them are not. Now let's take the great Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, just an example of somebody coming in and rising right now. She's also been in about 6 years like the others. She's the only one that came in with a basic bartending as a bartender. She had $19,000 worth of debt. She was someone that was actually, you know, with no money walking in. So 6 years later, she is worth $200,000. And it is climbing. So, again, when these silly bitches sit here and complain how they're broke and they have to maintain two houses and they have expenses they can't write off and they got two cars that they have to pay for and they got all blah, 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 shut up. When you sit here and you talk that way and you got guys worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And then you got people who've been in office less than 10 years. I've already hit the $1 million mark or the $2 million mark or the $18 million mark. I still don't understand the Ilhan Omar thing. You guys have got to stop that. It's pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. So I understand why they voted no on that bill. I understand why Trump and Musk and Vivek said no. I understand why Nancy Mace made her appearance and said, hey, you know, how do we go from 30 pages to 1,500 pages? I get it. And they're not wrong. This is bullshit. And I'm getting really tired of every single time they get to the end of the year, they do that crap. They try to shove as much garbage into a bill to make it through. It's like they sneak shit behind things. And at some point, and I'm kind of glad it's happening right now, at some point these guys have got to stop doing that. I know Mike Johnson's trying to do the right thing, but I think he needs to step up a little bit and be like, dude, no, we can't keep doing this. We just can't keep doing this. So something else that is going on in California, the great Gavin Newsom, He went up and he said, you know, in 2035, we're going to be 100% electric. We're going to have charging stations. We're going to have a high-speed rail, blah, blah, blah. Well, so far, we don't have the infrastructure done or even started. The high-speed rail is still sitting in Southern California. And in this whole transferring into electric vehicle thing, he has not actually unveiled what he is going to do with all the oil and all of the cars, all that waste that's just going to be sitting around in landfills and yards, or like, where is all this crap going to go? Well, something happened. The EPA, the Biden administration, they gave him approval finally to set their own emission standards for California, their own pollution standards, meaning that if you are a delivery truck and you don't meet that standard and you're coming from, say, Colorado, you cannot deliver to California unless you have the vehicle to meet the standard. So what that also does is pave the way for elimination of gas stations and things. And he's really pushing this issue, and And it's got no legs. I mean, there's no, it would make sense if he was actually making progress with the things that he talks about. Like he talked about the homelessness issue, how he finally got the Supreme Court to rule in his favor so he can remove them legally. But yet he has not done that. They're still all over the damn place. He has not. Then he turns around and he blames the mayors of all the cities and says, well, if the mayors don't get the job done, they're not going to get state funding. And for the most part, the mayors are calling his bluff because he's still sitting on funding from the prior year, from the prior budget. And the fact that we're sitting at a deficit, it gives a lot of mayors pause. A lot of city councilors are going, well, I'm not going to do this, knowing full well you don't have the money anyway, because you're paying, you know, past debts. So again, this guy has this electric save the planet idea, but yet no money. He doesn't have any plan. So I'm going to play a little bit of this clip here. This is him in an interview talking about going green.
These companies are already going in this direction. They're just trying to fight. I mean, they're going to have to put a cap on clean, not just dirty, in order to roll back these things. It's all changing, and they either should get on board or step aside. And I'm so done with these folks that are just, again, wholly owned subsidiaries of big oil that have polluted this planet and have created the conditions of extremes. I'm done with it. I'm sick and tired of being dependent on decisions made at OPEC. I'm sick of it. We're all sick of paying these high prices. We're sick and tired of this, the politics of this, and, you know, we should be drill baby. I'm sick of it. I mean, we can get rid of all that. We're done. Lower costs, more innovation, more economic growth, and cleaning our air. Cleaning up the environment, saving people's lives. I mean, you can debate that all you want. I hope he does do that in a few years. They'll be laughed at.
Why are the gas prices so high, Gavin Newsom? Why? Is he ever going to admit that it's his ideas that have made gas prices as high as they are in California? I mean, you have a winter blend and a summer blend. You know how it costs a fuck ton of money to make those blends rather than just going with straight regular gas. And why does he have these different blends? It's because because for some weird reason he believes that this is going to be less pollution out the back of the vehicle or less emissions at certain points during the year. So if you travel more in the summer, you have a summer blend that puts out less emissions, and then if you have a winter blend, you're driving less, it's a little bit more emissions, so it's somehow justified in his mind that this is saving the planet. More traffic, less emissions, less traffic, moderate emissions, or whatever the fuck. Set all that aside, his idea to do that, to make these different blends or these different types of gas, increases the cost of making it, which is then passed on to the consumer. Obviously, they're not going to bear the brunt of that cost. They're going to put it on us, right? On the taxpayer. And then you sit there and you put in regulation after regulation after regulation from your own environmental bullshit that it makes it harder to produce and or house and or transport all this stuff. And therefore, the cost goes on to the taxpayer. And that's why you're paying $5 a gallon, $4 a gallon in California. That's why you're paying almost $7 a gallon at the height of the COVID pandemic in the mountains, because it's so hard for these companies to produce anything. And this is not just in oil. It's not just in gas. It's in all forms of energy. They want it to be electric, but do you know the cost that it'll take to make the battery, mine the stuff, the environmental hazards involved in that? You have to mine the lithium to make the battery. You have to transport the lithium on a ship or plane. You have to, not only, then after you land in your somehow electric plane, across the or across the ocean in your completely non-locomotive, you know, it's going to have a fucking sail and you're going with the winds. You're sitting here with all of that pollution that you're creating just to have an electric car on your street. Not to mention the materials to even build the car. And now, after you do all that, you don't even have mechanics to work on the shit. So you have to find those people, which means you're shipping the car back to the manufacturer to fix it, or they're coming out to you with more of the stuff that is very, very hard on the environment to make. Does anybody know how much petroleum or rubber on the tires that they're going to still be making, putting on these cars? Do they understand that? The amount of oil that is used for the windmill or what, you know, to keep it going, or the solar plant panels, or in the amount of pollutants made to make that shit. And then when it breaks, you can't dispose of it like in the garbage. You have to sit there and go through a whole bunch of steps. And at the end of the day, what are we really fucking doing? We are still polluting the planet. There is no surefire way to do this safely at this time in our development as a society. The innovation on one end is there, but it's still not on the other end. And it's almost as if we need to just stick. It's almost as if we should be looking at ways to efficiently burn coal or efficiently mine our natural resources. We have to figure those out, and we can't even do that. And this fucking jackass wants to eliminate everything and just make us drive electric cars, which most of them can't even go no more than 200 miles. What if I have a job that's 300 miles away? I need a charging station. Oh, I forgot. The federal government has not even tried to get their charging program off the ground. I mean, $7 billion, and they've only have 7 charging stations. In California alone, we were supposed to have charging stations every 100 miles or so. That shit didn't happen. And I know there are people on the internet, and I know there are people in media saying, well, we just charge at home. I know, but that's still only 200 miles or 250 miles at best. And there are the expensive models at 300 miles, or sure, 300, 330 miles. But how many people can afford those models? And then you got people saying, well, there are used models for $16,000. Used batteries that's already got mileage on it? How much longer will that battery last me? If it breaks, how do I get a new one? I'm shipping the fucker back? Do I still have the warranty? No, I'm paying full price. So there's really no way to solve this puzzle right now, because we don't have the politicians in office in California that are thinking of all of the problems, solving them, actually focusing on the solutions. And these guys are just really blowing hot air. Now, in 2035, we already know he's going to run for president in 2028. He's not even going to be the governor in about a year and a half or so, because his term's going to run out. So the next governor will make a choice to keep this program or get rid of it. Now, I'm hoping it's a get rid of, because we don't have the ability, and in his entire governorship, he has not even tried to move the ball forward. But, you know, he is a talker. He is a talker. Let's get into some sports. There is a new format for the NBA All-Star Game, kids. Once again, Adam Silver is changing how he fucking does his thing. So, there's going to be a mini tournament with 4 teams and 3 games. There are 24 NBA All-Stars divided evenly into 8-player teams. The 4th team is going to be the Rising Stars champion. Honorary team captains and managers are Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, Kenny Smith, Candace Parker. I believe they're trying to give TNT their last hurrah because they're losing the NBA next season. Of course, Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, and Kenny Smith will draft off of the 24 All-Stars. Candace Parker will be in control of the Rising Stars champions, and those guys are already on a team. Of course, you know, they'll play each other until there's a champion, so it'll be a bracket type thing. Winner of each game is the first team that scores 40 points. Now, there's been some pushback from the NBA players, and a lot of them are talking about how they should go back to the East versus West, the old school format. You have Kevin Durant talking about it. There's an uprising. I'll just say that there's just an uprising there. Well, here's what something Stephen A. Smith said on First Take, and I actually agree with him wholeheartedly. This is the fault of the players. And had they done their job, had they had gone out and actually played basketball and meant it, you wouldn't have the problems you have right now. It's the same thing that happened in the NFL. If you guys had actually gone and played the game and put your body on the line and actually did your job and competed, there wouldn't be changes. There wouldn't be, you know, silly skills challenges and flag football events, or you wouldn't have the shit that you've had the last 4 or 5 years in the NBA All-Star game. These guys have turned it into a glorified dunk contest, a glorified layup line, etc. And they did it to themselves. And this is just Stephen A. reiterating that point.
The players have ruined All-Star Weekend. It's their fault that this is happening. You think Adam Silver and the NBA in concert with the Players Association want to be huddling for weeks, if not months, trying to come up with different formats for All-Star Weekend? All you have to do is go out there and play with effort and not have it be a glorified layup line or shooting contest. They play harder in the summertime, training amongst themselves, than they do in front of thousands of fans in an arena and millions watching for a star-studded All-Star Weekend and event. They have shamed the game of basketball. They have shamed the event. It is an absolute embarrassment, and I know it's not popular to say, but damn it, I'm Stephen A. I'm going to say it. I have absolutely positively, I'm sorry, I apologize to the NBA. I love me some Adam Silver. I love me the league office. I appreciate the effort that they put forth. But these players that have shown up on All-Star, I'm not talking about the three-point shooting contest. The slam dunk contest is an atrocity. And the All-Star, and the All-Star game is even worse. The lack of effort that they have shown has been such a disgrace. I personally have no desire to be in attendance for it. It is an embarrassment. And just so you know, Doggy, as an aside, I'm not playing. I'm serious. At some point in time, I'm going to have my own. I'm going to sponsor my own damn slam dunk contest nationwide.
Well, I don't know about listening. I don't know about watching his dunk contest, but I absolutely agree with what he's saying. It is on the players. It's their fault. They really ruined it with the way they act, the way they compete. The last All-Star game I watched all the way through was, I believe, 2001, 2002, somewhere in there, where they actually got after each other, and it was like a 92-87 ball game. And right now, you look at it, and it's like 155-151 or 188-190, 188-180 or some crap like that. It's just absolutely stupid. And nobody, and the ratings reflect that, and nobody really watches it. And I'm actually wondering, how do you fix this problem? Like, what has gone on? Like, what has gone on? And how does one fix this? You know, and there's something from Jason Whitlock from his Fearless podcast that I agree. You know, why does the NBA suck? you know, and why is it bad? Why are the ratings down? Why are things happening? And here's his take on it, and I kind of agree with it.
Quite frankly, hats off to Nikola Jokic, hats off to Giannis Antetokounmpo, but too many foreign players. Again, Americans like Americans. We like American success stories. We're nationalists by nature. They've ruined that. The best players are foreigners. God bless them, but they just don't connect the same way as the old players did. Larry Bird was from French Lick, Indiana. I don't really know where Luka Doncic is from. Slovenia, maybe? I've never been to Slovenia. I don't know where. Giannis? Is he Greek? Is he African? I don't know. Where is he from? I don't know. I've never been to his hood. Can't relate. Isaiah Thomas nailed the point about no variety in style of play. Everybody just does the same thing. And why wouldn't they? You get paid 20, 30 million bucks to go out and jack up threes. Why not? Take that money to the strip club. You can be hungover. You can be high and jack up threes. Not hard to do that. Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich. I just list those two because they are basically the AOC and Barack Obama of the NBA. It's their job to take a dump on America and tell everybody how racist and unfair America is and how everybody's a victim. Can't stand them. I mean, these guys and their little post-game press conferences or pre-game press conferences where they just dump on America, no one likes that. I can't believe Jason McIntyre is blaming Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal. And I'm like, we got two coaches whose entire brand is America's a racist, garbage place. And, you know, half of you voted for a guy that I think is Adolf Hitler. It just, I don't want to hear it.
Well, I agree with a lot of what he says here. I mean, obviously, the foreigner thing, I don't. I mean, if you really did your research and you cared enough and you claimed to be a journalist, Jason, then you would know exactly where Giannis is from. You would know where a lot of these foreign guys are from, Luka, all that. But what I do know off of the list that he has here, I agree with. They don't want to compete anymore. They're all interested in load management. They're all interested in minutes, restrictions, and taking breaks. They don't want to play 82 games. They don't even want to play a good chunk of anything outside of that. I don't understand that. You're getting paid to play a game that you claim you love, then play 82 games. Become available. Don't take vacations. You know, I do agree about the 3-point shooting. I don't understand the same thing what he said with no variety or style of play. I agree with all of that. And there's so much of these moments where I'm watching these games and I'm just like, he could have just simply laid that in and took the two and just been done with it. Instead, he's throwing it back out to the perimeter. Or I'm watching the pick and roll, but it's not rolling to the basket. It's there's your pick, there's your roll, and he's kicking it to the corner for a shot, you know, corner three. I understand to a degree that that's where the NBA has gone. And I understand that there's always changes. Even in the NFL, they went from running all the time to this run and shoot thing, to this run and gun thing and, you know, air it out and all that. And then it went back down to like extreme defense. So there's always ebbs and flows in sports. I get it. But what I'm not understanding is why this has become as popular as it has over the last, I want to say, 5-10 years. And it's not even basketball anymore. You know, Kobe Bryant said it best. He called it accidental basketball because you're just driving kick. There is no offensive philosophy. There is no, why are we doing this? What is the mission here? Why are we why why when the defense does this, we do that. Like, there's none of that anymore. It's just this free-flowing street backyard type thing. And I'm just waiting for a team to sit there and just pound the ball inside and just beat up a team, you know, and just do the whole mid-range game, you know, pick, roll, pop off the corner, bam, pick, roll, pop, pick this. I mean, I'm just waiting for it. And I know I'm just waiting for that to happen. And here's something that I wish would change, and it is the coaches getting out of talking about shit that ain't got nothing to do with basketball. And a lot of this is on the journalism as well. A lot of these guys ask those questions, and these guys will end up talking about it, or they'll turn around and volunteer, and nobody stops them or corrects them or what have you. And that to me is a bigger issue. So let's get a little local for a second. De'Aaron Fox was on the Draymond Green show, and I guess Draymond Green has Baron Davis on there or something. I didn't even know that, but for whatever that's worth. So here's what he had to say. He didn't sign his extension this year. He's got one more year left on his deal, and he has kind of put it out there that, you know, He's on a wait and see at this point.
What was the motivation for you to pass on the extension?
For me, man, it has all to do with the team, the organization. Where are we going? I want to make sure that we're in a position to try to win in the future, because that's ultimately what I want to do. Like, I feel like I'm continuing to get better as a player every year. But for me, it's, are we looking like we're continuing to get better year after year? And are we going to be able to compete at a high level? Totally. And that's all mine is. Like, if we can show that this year, like, you know, you sign the extension now. If not, like, I still have another year, but that's where my mindset is. I love the city. Like, I love being here. I've raised my family here. I would love to be here and retire here. I mean, how many people can say they played in one organization for their whole career? Like, right. I want to be a part of that select few people. But at the end of the day, I also want to win.
So he goes and he says that. Now, here's what his head coach says, which I think is nice. I actually like the response from Mike Brown, because De'Aaron Fox has gone on and he said this in the off season. He's saying it again on a podcast. And what Mike Brown says here, I have no issues with whatsoever.
You mentioned trying to clean that up and how a lot of it will fall on you and having to find ways to do it beyond film and walkthroughs. Is there added emphasis when you're going through practice now when you have moments like that?
Yeah, the reality of it is it starts with me, it ends with me, but Fox has to step up. He's a great player on the verge of being a superstar. As there are those guys, and they're the superstars that win at a high level. And part of his responsibility, starting with him, now that doesn't excuse Domas, that doesn't excuse DeMar, that doesn't excuse Malik, and even Keegan at a young age, doesn't excuse everybody. But you have a lot of responsibility if you're that guy, and he's that guy. And he can't be a part of not being locked in. And he for damn sure can't be a part of letting it go if we're not as a team. And so the pressure is on me and the pressure is on him to go get it done.
I like that. I absolutely do. Because too many times in sports, the player will get on a show and say things like, I want to win. I want to be a part of an organization that does this and that. And they have to show me that they want to win. And the roster has to be built a certain way and all this stuff. It's really refreshing when a coach gets on the mic and says, hey, you know what? You can talk all that crap you want, but you have to do your job. You can't sit there and go 0-for-5 in the first quarter against the Denver Nuggets, miss defensive assignments, and we're down 20, And you're over here talking about roster construction and winning games and being a part of an organization that wants to win. Now, I get it. He's in his second year of his prime. He's got one more contract coming up that would be around his prime years. So he's in that window to win games. He's in that window to become competitive and in the playoffs year after year after year. So he wants to make sure that the organization is in line with his thinking. And that's all well and good. But when you get up on a show and you get up on the air, so to speak, and you start saying these things and putting the team and the coaching staff essentially on notice, you know, you also have to have all your I's dotted and all your T's crossed. Like, I've seen so many games where De'Aaron Fox is a non-factor for the first half. I've seen so many games where De'Aaron Fox goes 1-for-10 and he produces no defense whatsoever. I've seen games where he only shows up in the fourth quarter. And he picks and chooses when he wants to play. I have seen him go on a vacation for 2-3 weeks at a time. You know, the greats don't go on vacation. Kobe Bryant may have a game here or a game there, but out of 82 games, he is locked in and ready to go for 75, 76 of them. De'Aaron Fox will play 82 games and he's only around for 60. Maybe. And that's being generous. So if he's going to say these things, Mike Brown has every right to say, you know what? You got to step up and play too. You can't not be locked in the first quarter. We go down 20 and then you decide to show up in the third quarter. We cannot have that. And then you sit around and talk about winning and you talk about wanting to be great and all this crap. You have to play too. And this, and it's really irritating when you hear players do that. When you hear players say those things and a coach will say that, and then all of a sudden there's this rift because the player got called out. But then when you look at the games where De'Aaron Fox goes dormant, you're watching Sabonis play his ass off and score 30 points or 25 points or a triple double, and he's getting nothing out of his star player. You know, and that's got to change too. And those are things that are just needs to be addressed. Those are things that I am a Sacramento Kings fan. I am a guy that lives in California. I do see these games a lot. And there's another game going on today against the Lakers. And I see this stuff a lot. And I'm really hoping that this stuff that is going on over the last, a week now, because they've only played one game. So this has been going through the media the whole time. And a lot of local guys have been talking about it and whatever, but what I'm really hoping for is that these guys don't have that rift. And I'm really hoping that they want to work together and they want to win these games. And I'm hoping that this doesn't force Monty to make a decision that's ridiculous. And I've ranted about this already, you know, on previous podcasts, talking about the Sacramento Kings and the way they're constructed and what could be done in a trade. And the only needle mover that they have on that roster is their top six. And I don't see them moving those six guys. And I also, at least this year, and I don't see them getting a whole lot for guys like Keon Ellis, for guys like Trey Lyles. I just don't see it. I mean, what can you know, there's this talk about Cam Johnson. I don't think those players are impactful enough to get Cam Johnson. And I don't see them parting with Keegan Murray, which is the other piece that might move the needle. And I've said this before in recent years in terms of the trade market. The Kings only had one guy on that roster anybody really wanted, and that was Harrison Barnes. And the only way you're going to get anybody was to move Harrison Barnes. And they finally moved him, and you get DeMar DeRozan. A few years ago, the same thing could be said for Sabonis. The only player on that roster that might move the needle would have been Halliburton, Barnes at that time, Harrison Barnes. And they got Sabonis by moving one of those guys. And this year, we're looking at the trade landscape, and I look at the roster. They're not moving DeMar. They're just not. Sabonis ain't going anywhere. This year, you may see Keegan stick. I don't see them moving De'Aaron Fox this year. Malik Monk's not going anywhere. There's maybe a market for Kevin Huerter, but I don't see it. I just don't see them moving him either. Trey Lyles might be tradable. Keon Ellis, I wouldn't move him. I wouldn't make the same mistake in back-to-back years and move the best defensive player you have. But if it moves a trade, then you might see Keon moved. Outside of that, what's Alex Len going to get you? Nothing. He's a filler. What are you going to get out of the Jones guys? Isaac, Colby, nothing. They're not. If Isaiah Crawford is as awesome as he is, as they say, maybe. I don't know. I mean, maybe he becomes a rotational player that would force you to move Alex Len. Or maybe they keep Orlando Robinson and move Alex Len as a filler. But there's nothing on that bench that makes me, if I was a GM, it would make me want to move Cam Johnson or Finney Smith or the mythical dream of Jimmy Butler. There's just nothing there that makes you want to do that. And this whole Kyle Kuzma garbage or the Zach LaVine nonsense, that's a financial thing. You're not moving those guys over unless you empty the bench or you move, say, Lyles, Monk, and Huerter. That equals Zach LaVine's salary, but you still haven't addressed the bench, so what's the point of Zach LaVine? And Jimmy Butler's going to opt into his $50-plus million player option. So if you were to get that, then you get that opt-in. Unless Vivek wants to pay into the tax or then the next apron, I don't see that happening either. It's almost as if these guys are going to get stuck with what they have and they're going to have to deal with it. And they're just going to have to figure out how to move forward. Anyway, guys, that's episode 83. It's in the bag. Thank you all for listening. Appreciate each and every one of you. And I will see you for the final episode of the year, and I will address some stuff later.